It's finally here. Undercurrents Seafood Titans Top 150 report, an annual ranking of the sector's largest firms as measured by disclosed or estimated revenues. And as you can expect, it's filled with gems, some of which I'll be breaking down on this week's podcast episode with Jason Smith, the author of the Top 150 report. Welcome, Jason. This must have been a feat to complete. I don't have any champagne to celebrate, but I do have some salmon snack sticks I can break out.
Well, salmon snack sticks sound like a pretty good plan. definitely, you know, definitely could use some fish after this report. It was a long process, but it's absolutely worth it in the end.
A labor of love. And this is Undercurrent's 12th Top 150 report, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So tell us a little bit about what this report encompasses.
Sure. So this... Just stepping back a second, this started, you know, when Undercurrent was founded about over a decade ago, one of the first things that, you know, our co-founders decided was that there really wasn't a lot of great baseline information about the seafood industry, about who the biggest players were. So that's where this came from, is it's an effort to annually chart the basically the breadth and the depth of the seafood industry, ranking the companies, the largest companies in the world by revenue. And there's a couple of caveats to that in the way that in the way our methodology works. We're looking specifically for seafood sales. So some of these companies do other things. They're wider food companies. You know, we don't include retail, we don't include restaurants, we don't include feed, but anything from farming or harvesting to essentially to distribution and everything in between, including processing, trading, wholesaling, that's all included. And so generally we're talking about seafood companies with turnovers from 7 billion. At the start of the report, the largest company in the world, that's Umios, which used to be known as Maruho and Ichiro, and to the smallest, which is around 300 million.
So I'm glad you brought up Umios. One of the things that has not changed this year is the number one company on the list, although they did just recently rebrand from Maruho to Ichiro to Umios. So you said that you've seen Umios in the number one spot in the 12 years that you've been doing this, you know, ever since the rebrand now too. Do you see them maintaining this top spot moving forward?
I do believe that Umios is going to be, you know, certainly one of the largest seafood companies for, you know, the foreseeable future. I also think there's a chance that, you know, some of the larger salmon companies, particularly Maui, might overtake it in the next couple of years.
Now, while that company held onto its top spot, would you say there's a lot of movement elsewhere on the list?
Yeah, absolutely. Year to year, there's fluctuations, of course. And the other important thing to note in this report is that we're basing this information off 2024 sales, and only because it's important to get that consistent baseline, and these sales numbers take a little while to come in. But in 2024, you had, you know, it was, I think, reminiscent of several trends that we've seen, notably that, you know, inflation is still a concern, still a major concern for a lot of consumers. I think you're seeing in some places, you're seeing slowing growth. But in food, you're seeing at least those top line numbers are staying steady, or, you know, people are able to pass along those price increases to consumers. So you're not seeing a lot of declining sales. And that said, some species did better than others.
I do want to just like dive into a little bit more on the mergers and acquisitions. Looking at Cook, number 7 on the list, they recently acquired a couple of companies, including Australia's Tassel, and then just recently fighting a legal battle in Greece to carry out a takeover of Avramar. So, and also possibly linked to a possible play for Spain's Nueva Pescanova. So all these things are taken into consideration when looking at this report. And also what's really neat about this report is that when you click on a company, it pulls up all this information about their sales, but then you can also look at, besides the summary, the description of the company, events, major events that took place within the past few years, and then all the news specifically tied to that company, which is really cool as well.
I think that's one of the one of the things that I really try to do when I'm writing this report is we summarize the everything that's happened basically in the past year, because it's so easy to lose track in, the day-to-day of what's truly going on with these companies. So we try and do a lot of summary and high level view of where these folks are going.
One of them we'd like to follow is Alaska's Peter Pan Seafood Company unexpectedly ceasing operations. That was another curveball to hit this list that they were previously a top 150 player, correct, Jason?
They were, and they're, they were on the list, I believe, for the first time in the first edition of Seafood Titans, and they, basically, as most readers know, they had some financial issues, and they're no longer on the list as an independent company. They are on the list in the sense that their Silver Bay, which wasn't on the list just a couple of years ago, is now the 27th largest seafood company in the world. And
Wow, not on the list a couple of years ago, and now it breaking the top 50 of it. That's pretty wild.
yeah, they've estimated revenues of well over $1 billion, and that's just pretty incredible, when you look at the When you look at the context of the Alaska seafood sector.
Yeah, they picked up processing plants from Trident, OBI Seafoods, and Peter Pan Company all in recent years. So, but yeah, no, it's crazy to see how this list changes from year to year, and what one incident could do to launch a company from not even on the 150 list to number 27.
I mean, that's why I enjoy doing this, is because it really keeps me, in tune with what's going on in the seafood sector.
That's right. And so then one final question for you, because I also don't want to give too much of the report away, and we'll talk about how you can access it in a minute. But was there anything about this year's top 150 list that surprised you?
Absolutely. I think that one of the more interesting trends that I saw is that you have a lot of Russian companies on the report that I would have expected, wouldn't have would been much smaller or would have really suffered. And I'm sure they've struggled with the war in Ukraine and the related sanctions. But what you're seeing is a lot of those companies are just pivoting to China, or they're pivoting elsewhere, and they seem to be doing just fine, many of them. For the first time, we had on the report a company called Unifrost, which purchased some assets after the sanctions, forced a European company to divest them, and they're still fi trying to find continuing to find growth, and that's really interesting to me.
Thanks, Jason. Now, this report is included as part of your Undercurrent Pro subscription. So if you go to My Reports, you can access it there by going to the Undercurrent front page, Reports, Top 150. If you don't have an Undercurrent Pro subscription, reach out because this is a report you will not want to miss. Thanks again, Jason.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I appreciate it.